Hello everyone and welcome to a new episode of Software Crafts Podcast. I'm your host João and today with us we have Lavina. Lavina is working in tech for over 7 years now. Her expertise is in software testing and quality assurance with a good mix of both technical and business awareness. She has learned a lot throughout her career and is looking forward to gain more knowledge and at the same time inspiring other testers around the world. Hi, Lavina, and thanks for your time to be with us.
Hi, thank you very much for having me.
No problem. So, the heuristic for today, it's related to your field of expertise, and its tests should be fast, reliable, and independent. What are your thoughts about these?
So, I completely agree with this, although I've not ever worked in a team where all three are there. There might be some of them, not all, but 100% agree with that. I think I'd like to start with some notes that I've made, and I'd like to say that in order to reach reliable, fast, and independent tests, you should get basically the scope of your test, keep it to the smallest possible. Don't add too much to your tests. It just becomes clunkier, and then the scope just, you're missing the point. So keep your tests small and keep scopes very small. Optimize your slow tests or flaky tests to make them more reliable. That's where the reliability comes in. Sometimes when we go and do some tests, so for example, I've done TDD in the past, test-driven development, and I've written like a very big test and then it passes, but it's doing a bit more than what I really wanted to do. So it makes it go very slow. So just make sure you're optimizing it. Make sure there are easier ways to like refurbish that test, refactor it. So I would suggest that. And then obviously working in an iterative development team, if you're working in Agile, for example, release small chunks more often, because then you have more confidence that we are not leaving things till the very end. So this is again making your system more reliable, more maintainable. Because I have worked in waterfall in the past, and I must say that even though it's a good methodology in terms of testing and QA, it's too late until we get it to test it. So I would suggest in an agile team, try and release small chunks, release often, because then you can get a better feedback loop from your client as well, that, this is what we wanted. This is a new change that we'll bring in because it's not what we really want. So it's good. And you test sooner and you fix sooner as well, because if you in Agile, for example, if you see a bug, you fix it straight if possible. In Waterfall, what you have to do is you go till the end, you find a bug, and then up we go again, we start the process again. So try and have a process in the team where you can fix soon and you can test soon as well. I'll just give you an example. When we were releasing recently, we found quite a few bugs and we weren't ready to release. So we found like 3-4 bugs. And what happened was straight away, the whole team was on board and they said, okay, let's spend more time to fix them rather than release. It's important we release a good quality product, a fast product, not something that is making the user experience negative. So we spent more time fixing those quickly, and it's a much better process. And I quite liked it that we didn't rush into a release, because it's dangerous. You might introduce something that you fixed and you quickly released. You rather fix something, check if new issues were introduced because of that fix, and then go ahead in the release train. And then other things that I really like is in order to have a fast, reliable, independent QA testing team, you can also introduce a testing pyramid. I know that many people are a bit positive about it, some negative. Some people say that it's not worth having a pyramid, but I would suggest every team has its pyramid. It's designed differently. It might not look like a pyramid as it is. It might look like a little burger with the top and the bottom and the long slice in the middle, for example. So just make sure you have less amount of UI tests on the top because they're very expensive, and have more integration level tests, API testing in the middle, and then have your system kind of unit tests at the bottom, because these two layers in the middle actually give you confidence that the product is actually responding like we want it to do. And then the UI is giving you the final tick, saying that, okay, if I'm testing it in the front end, can I run a happy path? Can I run an unhappy path? What does it look like? So it's like the final checklist. And then other things that I've thought, basically, if you do all of this right, quality of your product will go up and the time you need to develop will shorten. If you obviously take a faster route, you might introduce unnecessary bugs that you might have not noticed, and you'll go into the Swiss cheese process. So I'm sure loads of people are aware of the Swiss cheese in testing. There might be some bugs under those holes that you might have not noticed before. So we want to try and avoid that, because it's not nice that a client is using your product and finds something. You rather find it yourself first. So just be careful to release a reliable product. And something that I really like, as a team, when you're planning your tests or API tests, find the high risks area and the high value add area. So go through your user journey, and try and understand, what is the high risk area for me in this product? What would happen if this specific high risk area is down that day? Would I still be able to do a workaround and reach my endpoint, or it's completely broken? So identify your high risks and high add value areas and work towards that to basically create a fast, reliable, and independent test. Other than that, I think independent testing, I've seen a lot in my team now. I'd see the product owners going in and testing the product, which is really nice, because they find something that me or my colleague as testers were unaware. And it's fine, because we are potentially following a mindset that we follow on a day-to-day basis, and we might have missed a nugget of information, or just the description didn't make sense and the product owner thought, oh, this might trouble the user, so let me tell the testers that we should fix this description on the product. So I would definitely suggest independent testing. Testing is something that I think many people in the team, in the SDLC team, can do. We can pair together. Like sometimes the PO asks me, can I pair with you when you're analyzing your results? I want to understand how you analyze it, and it would be good to see, to understand the product more. So you can see there's appetite of everyone else to learn the product as well. And that's how a good, I think a very hybrid team is working together hand in hand. We are all communicating, we are all collaborating. And at the end of the day, quality is not just a tester's responsibility. We are not just the safety nets, it's everyone. So I would suggest if everyone works hand in hand, we have a reliable, fast, and independent tests, and we can gain confidence that what we are trying to provide to our customers is of top quality.
Thanks for this introduction. I see these, all of these thoughts flowing around, and now I have lots of post-its in front of me. So thanks for this, and I hope that the audience also enjoy to pick up how is your frame of thought. So I'm going to go with a small challenge, or a big one. Mm-hmm. We have seen organizations going from monolith architectures to more modular or microservice architectures. And I don't intend to discuss the merits or good versus bad. But what I have observed is that in terms of testing, with monoliths, we had regression packs, right? And people try to bring those to microservices, which have some consequences. And especially integration tests that cross lots of boundaries. What is your opinion here? How do you approach these types of problems?
So I've written a post actually that's going to go live soon around regression testing. And it's good that you mentioned this, because obviously users can go and actually now read it when it's live. But I think we can't miss regression testing, whether it's a monolith or microservices. I think one way or the other, I'm sure there's a way we can plan as a team or as testers how we are going to approach this. Sometimes teams get enough confidence just doing the API endpoint tests via Postman, for example. Sometimes teams like mine, for example, I'm trying to bring in Postman. So let's see how that goes. But it would just give us more confidence. But microservices type of team, I think it's vital that somehow you capture some sort of regression test, whether that's just doing smoke testing with the new code deployed to your branch, for example. I mean, they're very different microservices and monoliths, but try and add regression however possible, because it just gives you more confidence of what we have built, what the developers have built, and what you've tested is actually doing what it's supposed to do. And it's not just going into other paths, for example.
Yep, so that's right.
I hope I answered your question.
And I have more follow-up questions, just teasing your mind. So let's go down its route and be more specific with monoliths, right? So usually we have one database and then we can test several user journeys, but the validation goes to database with microservices implemented on proper way. Without a shared database, we have multiple data stores. Yeah. And I was thinking about our practices in teams that create software, that, for instance, if we adopt contract testing, we can still validate the journeys, but at the same time have these independent tests and also independent teams.
Yeah.
How did you consider these practices that we can embrace? Perhaps there are more, but this is just what occurs to me.
Yeah, I think I have a similar situation. So we've got different data sets and of the clients, right? So we can't really say that now we're just going to use one type of data set. The reason we use the others is because sometimes my data set does not capture the features that the other data set does. So it's important to keep both. So I get your point now that how to actually make sure they're reliable. So obviously, my tests are not fully automatable yet. We are planning to go there with API endpoints, but we're trying to create a golden data set to have it all unified, all the main features, all the high risk areas into one data set, a golden data set. And then we are going to do our testing for regression through that. So in terms of different databases, I would suggest having automated checks. So try and see if there's something that you can analyze via automated checks and connect them to different databases, if that's possible. But in terms of my area, where it's a data science model and it's very stochastic because it uses genetic algorithms and predictive analytics, I think our results are random. So those are expected. So what we have done instead is we've put a threshold of, if it's between this percentage and this percentage, we will accept the result. If it's out of this, rerun the model with better configurations. So I think obviously automate checks with different databases. Not that I've had experience with that yet, but I'd definitely like to try something like that. But I hope that's what you were looking for.
Yeah, it's your experience. And that actually was my next thing, because I don't know a lot about data science, right? And what I do know is that lots of people are going with more engineering practices towards data science. And I see that you have experience with that. So you touch a totally different way, if I understood correctly, to approach tests in a field, right? You work with thresholds, what is acceptable, which is totally different when I work with business systems, that we have these inputs and we expect exactly this output, so there is no margin.
Yeah.
What other testing practices shift when we change domains, right? When we go from this predictive software to data science, what other practices change? I'm very, very curious.
So I think I've been involved in loads of things. So obviously we do new feature testing. So because it's a model, it's a new thing. So what we have as a team is you can create like a baseline test. So if I was to release 2 weeks ago, I will use that test and the results versus my new release that I would do 2 weeks after and check. Last 2 weeks ago, these were the results. This week is this result. How are they so different, or are they very similar? What has the stochasticness done here? Are these within threshold or not? So the check over there that we do is automated. So it quickly just checks the files and throws output files for us to check results. And I think it's super interesting because obviously you would expect to be in a data science team and be like a mathematics pro, but actually it's much more simpler. I think I had no idea I'm going to be doing this because it wasn't mentioned, but I worked with the data scientists. I worked with the developers to understand how you're building this. How does this impact the product? And with the front-end developers as well to see what the product would look when this implementation would go in. So I worked hand in hand, and it's first time this experience where I'm actually working with them and pairing up with them quite a lot. Because obviously as testers, we have so many questions and we have appetite to learn more and bring new checks in and whatnot. So yeah, I do a lot of new feature testing, which means anything new that's being built, how did it impact the product? So I run the model and I check that it can run end to end, or any results that I've changed or optimized, they still work. And then I also do regression testing. Apart from that, a little bit of performance testing is handy. Sometimes, you know, you can change the configurations of your model and see how fast or slow your run has done. That's something that we can do as well. And other than that, I'm trying to bring in API endpoint checks now, which would be handy. Other than that, we've got Cypress UI side of testing, which is useful. And I've also liked to be involved more in the UI design side of things, because it's important. Like, testers usually are the closest people to the users. So we wear the user's hat, actually. And if I don't understand the design, or if I don't understand the description on the product, how would the user do it? So I like to work a lot hand in hand with the designers. And if I find something difficult, I mention it to them, and then we can see how we can change this. And apart from that, what I really feel good about as well is introducing accessibility testing. And that's been really good, because the minute you have a front-end product, you need to think about it. So all the colors, everything that comes into accessibility, can you tab through a product? Can it speak to you back? If you remove images of the UI, what does it look like? So all of those have been handy, because you never know what the user is, who your actual client will be. And it's good to be socially aware and make your product socially aware as well, so that everyone can use it. So yeah, these would be my answers to your question.
Very, very interesting to see the approaches in this data science world. I can see how you brought some of the well-known practices and use them, but also can see that you use exactly the same practices. It's not the first time that you talk about pairing and the PO joins and you use.
Yeah.
What other practices that we as an industry know that they are proven practices, like pair programming, although it's not two people in a keyboard, we are way more effective because we reduce the work in progress. What other practices work from the typical software development, business line type of style, inputs versus outputs, that are also applicable in the data science world? You refer one, pairing, but there are other practices?
So I have seen pair programming happening between the developers. Other practices, I'm not very sure, but I think the biggest one is just collaborate with them, ask a lot of questions, pairing up. And sometimes, you know, because it's a statistical black box, the model, sometimes you might get, you might be in the planning session and they might suggest, the developers might suggest, oh, this is not testable really. So then I get questions in my head that, huh, how is this not testable? I'm sure it is. let's try and find a way to test it, because you can't, I'm sure you can test it. If you can't test it, at least let's get on a meeting and you can show me the code that you've put in, and let's see if I can understand it and how it's actually impacting the product. And the last option would be basically run the model end to end with their implementation and see that because of their addition to code, it's not actually broken the product. So this is another thing that I've thought, like, when someone says it's not testable, why is it not testable? Think about it. Don't just leave it, because if it's not testable now, it might have a bug in the future. So just to be careful, just to be, a sanity check from your end. So yeah, I think with data science testing, it's a little bit like shifting to the left. And I really enjoyed that. It's a new area for me. So yeah, I mean, the team is very open to suggestions as well, and they're super friendly. So it all depends around your team as well, like how it's all happening. But yeah, I would suggest always ask a lot of questions, try and pair as much as you can, collaborate in anything, be present in all meetings, because you might miss one nugget of information that might help you testing. So it's super vital. And because it's a statistical black box, it's important you understand your data as well. What your data is doing, why are you using that data, and how does it value the users? So these are the kind of things I would suggest.
Very interesting, although those practices applies over the different domains, right? So we can even say that those are patterns. And you got a nice bridge to my next question. You talk about you shift some stuff to the left part of the software development lifecycle, let's call like that. And before also you said that you and your team have a risk-based approach. You think about user journeys and you think where is the risk, so you invest your time. How about the concepts from chaos engineering, continuous verification, that is pushing that to the right, not to the left? Do you think that is also applicable in the field of the data science where you are working now?
Yeah, I think there have been situations where obviously something is like drastically broken. We can't really proceed. So obviously there's a pause moment there. There's like everyone's blocked. And the very minute someone picks up and investigates the situation. So I think the response is really quick, and we rather do it right than do it wrong and rush into it. So I think in terms of chaos engineering, it's important that also as a tester, you understand what has gone wrong, try and understand the error logs, try and see if you could have done it differently or if there's a workaround. So try and find solutions as well to it. And I've never coded like a developer does, but just sitting with them on a call when they're investigating amongst themselves, I'm listening in. Even if I'm on mute, I'm there, I'm present. So that I quite enjoy that side of things, because I know before, if something used to be in traditional ways, something used to break, they would just go on their own to a meeting room, try and work it out, and then provide a solution. But now, us like testers just being there present, asking questions, definitely is more of a shift left than shift right. Would you agree?
I will. I see, because I'm also a student of complexity theory, namely Knevin, and one of the cornerstones is the power of narratives. Just your description, and I was putting this in a post-it, you listen into the calls and you mute yourself. So you are trying to make sense of reality and align the mental models, which is brilliant as a practice, right? So we try to blend the information in. It's brilliant. So it never occurred to me and how narratives can apply. And also you touch in a different point. And before you talk about the Swiss cheese concept, I never heard of it, but it's just brilliant, the metaphor. And now we talk about some concepts of observability. You look to the logs, and so you look to the internals. But that also, it's going to the right. or shifting to the right, although sometimes is in the between, because with your tests or the way that you do tests on data science, you compare the boundaries and times that takes and this type of stuff. So you need a strong component of observability metrics and all of this type of data. Is that correct in my...
Yes, yes. As testers, I think we are quite inclined to work with metrics. And it's vital, I think. It just guides you as to what your tests are doing, how well it's doing. So it's just like a little statistics, isn't it? These metrics that they help you. So I tried adding metrics, but obviously with this type of model tests, it wasn't very, very successful. But I think when we have our API endpoint tests and all, I think we can somehow have better metrics there and try and measure it properly. So I think it's in my team, for example, it's more important we have a stable and maintainable product, but that doesn't stop anyone in their teams to actually go and think about metrics that help the product and understand better. Because at the end of the day, if you have to present as a product owner or delivery manager, if you do have to present anything that we are doing in the team, these metrics are actually helpful. So try and make metrics that are not just understandable to testers or developers, but also to people who are not entirely technical. That would be something useful too. So, yeah. What would you say?
Yeah, it's a really good advice. I see that. First, I totally agree, right? Metrics help. We shouldn't also be afraid to delete some metrics or KPIs if they don't apply to our context. But generally speaking, yes, if we can expose them in an organization and we have more teams, we reduce dependency, right? Because I don't need to ask you to expose the metrics. So yeah. A push model, we have a pull model. You expose that and I try to make sense of the world. Maybe I need your help, maybe I don't. Yeah. And I also think that has a huge effect on the organization itself, because it promotes transparency and also helps people to think about their own context. I change something and metrics of other teams start changing and I know that they are a downstream system. Perhaps I need to think about my behavior. Do I need to introduce different engineering practices? Do I need to do different social practices? So opens new doors.
Yeah, definitely.
That also leads to one of your remark that I want to understand better. When you were describing that the testers also use the user's head, you talk about be socially responsible.
Yeah.
This is your statement, if my memory doesn't
go. With accessibility. Yeah.
Exactly. Can you develop further this idea? This is about inclusion and diversity, or there are more layers over there?
Yeah, it's more around inclusion about everyone, right? I know there's a big percentage of people who are disabled and they can still work completely fine at an office or as clients. So I'm thinking to myself always, the minute there's a front end introduced, will someone just like me be using it, or someone who might have a little eyesight that needs more attention, or maybe they might have a hearing situation, or they might not be able to read certain colors. They might be colorblind, for example. Okay. So I think if the product has to be successful, it should capture everyone's situation. It includes everyone. It wouldn't be very successful if I were to release something and someone cannot read it properly. And there's a massive amount of people in this world. So I want to reach to everyone rather than just certain type of people. So I think it's super useful, and it's always respecting everyone else. Don't think that you're testing this as a user and everyone will be like you. No, no, no. You have to respect that. There are certain situations you need to be more socially aware and socially inclusive as well. So accessibility testing, I think the minute you hear front end, you should definitely introduce accessibility in your team. I've actually written two blogs, one with Mary Drake and one with Viv Richards, which are available on my LinkedIn. Have a read. If it's difficult sometimes to introduce accessibility in your team, try and read the steps that we've done. So it might help you with ideas. Because I have heard from many people that, oh, we can't do accessibility because it's expensive. Hang on a second. There's so many free options and plugins that you can use. And those are mentioned in Viv's and mine blog. So have a read and see how you can proceed. Maybe not instantly, but at least you've put the seed in the team. Let the flower bloom slowly, but at least you spoke about it and you're making everyone aware. It's really, really important. I think when I made a presentation, I made sure that everyone understands it, not just me or the head, like everyone knows what I'm trying to say. So it's super important and you will see the results for yourself.
I believe so. And I totally relate to your story. We think that, yeah, everyone is like me, which, well, goes to our processes and the way that we test product. And I also face in the past exactly the same situation. Oh, it's too expensive. But and I'm go like, okay, let's say that we spend 100K and we are doing 10 million with the product. Is that expensive? Who cares, right? It's about inclusive. It's about be socially responsible. And I think that we have the same concept based on your explanation, because, well, I'm colorblind, that's why you're laughing, because I was pointing to me, but, well, other disabilities pop up and there are disabilities that I can have tomorrow, I don't know, right? This is how it goes.
Of course.
And I really like the inclusion, right? The having this mindset. And I also can say that I don't see this mindset across our industry a lot.
Agree with you.
Yeah,
I think we need to push it a bit. As I said, the minute you hear UI front end, please speak to your teams, please introduce it, because what's more better? Add a product that will be used by a certain percentage of the world and not the rest, and it's not adding value? Or would you prefer add value and make sure you reach more people? It's a question for all the listeners now, because it may be a bit expensive, but think about it. More people can use it. You rather more people use it or less people?
Yep. And it's an amazing, amazing question. I hope that people will engage with us. I will make sure that all of your social media is also there. And let's leave with this thought about the epistemical justice. That is what we are talking about. How can we balance the playing field? Just love that. What are your thoughts over there? And we are towards the end of the episode. I'm going to put the resources that you just mentioned regarding accessibility. But what are other resources, books or blog posts, videos, talks that you want to mention for our audience?
So I would suggest Swiss Cheese blog that's out there. And then The Tester's Pocket Book by Paul Gerard. So it just helps testers understand how else they can be involved. It really helped me. It's a very thin book and I love thin books. I rather have thin books than thick books. and then it's called Accelerating Software Quality by Perforce, which is Aaron Kinsburner's book, which came out recently. And this is all about machine learning, artificial intelligence in the age of DevOps. So if you want to get involved in my area, which I definitely want to give a shout out, please get involved. There's very less testers doing data science testing. So please get involved. And if you are working with a data science model, but not in touch with data scientists, please try and get your team to communicate with them, because they are the brains to it. So you rather all understand it than just them. And I think just reading some of the blogs I've written, and I'm happy to have any coffee catch-ups. If you can add me on LinkedIn, then I can take you over certain things or questions that you might have, and happy to help you.
Lovely. And pick up this call for action. So I hope to see the feedback that you receive from people. And with this, we get to the end of the episode. I want to say thanks for your time and sharing your wisdom with us.
Thank you very, very much. Thanks for having me. And I hope I've answered your questions, and hopefully the viewers have enjoyed as well. The listeners, not viewers.
yes, definitely. And more thoughts in my head as well. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
You can follow us on Twitter at @scraftspodcast. Visit our website, softwarecraftspodcast.com, or follow our page on LinkedIn.